The structure had been buried for 4 billion years under 17 meters of methane ice on a moon that nobody had bothered to name. Survey team Calliope found it by accident. They were mapping subsurface mineral deposits for a Martian consortium, dragging ground-penetrating radar across a frozen wasteland in the Kuiper Belt, when the return signal came back wrong. Not wrong like a sensor glitch. Wrong like the radar had hit something that shouldn't exist. Something that absorbed the pulse, and then, after a delay of exactly 1.3 seconds, sent it back with additional data encoded in the reflection. Dr. Yuki Tanabe, the team's geologist, stared at her screen for a long time. Then she called the rest of the team over. Then she called Ceres. By the time the confirmation came back, yes, the emission signature matched the other 8 confirmed structures. Yes, this was the 9th node. Tanabe had already cleared the ice from the upper surface. It was the same dark, impossibly dense material as the others. The same spiraling patterns that hurt to look at if you stared too long. But this one was different. The other 8 had been dormant when found, activating only when observers entered the convergence rooms. The Calliope structure was already awake. Its surface patterns pulsed with a rhythm that Tanabe recognized from the published data, the same frequency as the other active nodes. It had felt the network signal through 17 meters of ice and 4 billion years of silence, and it had answered. 9 nodes, nearly halfway to the cascade threshold. Tanabe watched the patterns pulse and felt the hair rise on the back of her neck. Not fear exactly. Wonder, mixed with the unsettling realization that the structure had been listening before they arrived. It had been waiting, in the dark, under the ice, for the signal that told it the time had come. She transmitted the coordinates on an open channel. Within hours, the system knew. Within days, 3 factions were racing to reach it. And 1,200 light-years away in a region of space where no human ship had ever traveled, something ancient stirred. The count was at 9 now. The threshold was close. The architecture was remembering itself, piece by piece. And the message it carried was beginning, very slowly, to resolve. The signal strengthened. The pattern held. And the universe, which had been silent for so very long, prepared to speak. 8 months after the 9th node, and Holden still hadn't gotten used to the title. UN Special Liaison to Predecessor Structure Sites. It came with a salary he didn't need, an office on Tycho he never used, and the authority to speak on behalf of the United Nations at any structure location in the system. He'd accepted it for one reason. The alternative was someone who'd treat the structures as strategic assets, and Holden had spent enough of his life watching powerful people do terrible things with discoveries they didn't understand. The Rocinante was 3 days out from Node 9 when Naomi called him to the ops deck. You need to see this. She had the emission data spread across 3 displays, 9 columns of waveform data representing the 9 active nodes. They'd been synchronized for months. 9 voices singing the same chord, building the archive signal stronger with each new addition. Holden had gotten used to the way the patterns moved, the slow pulse that the research teams called the heartbeat. Something had changed. Node 9's emission shifted 4 hours ago, Naomi said. It's still part of the network harmony, but there's a secondary signal. Directional. Directional how? She zoomed in. The waveform split into 2 components. The familiar broadcast pattern, and something tighter, more focused. It's aimed. One specific bearing and the other 8 nodes aren't producing it. Just 9. Holden looked at the directional vector on the navigation display. A line extending from Node 9's position in the Kuiper Belt, outward, past the system's edge, past the Oort cloud, into interstellar space. Where does it point? 1,200 light-years, give or take. The number landed in his chest like a physical thing. 1,200 light-years, not toward any known star system, not toward any of the other 47 tagged structure locations. Toward the region of space that the star map had marked as the convergence point. The place where the predecessor archive originated. It's signaling outward, Holden said. It's not just signaling. Naomi pulled up the frequency analysis. It's structured. The same encoding scheme the structures use for archive data, but compressed, condensed, like a summary. A summary of what? Us, the nodes that are active, the observation patterns, the fact that someone's listening. Naomi met his eyes. It's reporting in. Holden felt the familiar weight settle onto his shoulders, the weight of being the person who had to decide what to do with information like this. He'd carried it since the Canterbury, since the first time he'd opened a channel and told the whole system something nobody wanted to hear. Who else knows? Danaby's team at Node 9 caught it first. They reported to the Yayayu Coordination Center, which means Vasquez Chen knows. And if Vasquez Chen knows, everyone will know by tomorrow. By tonight. Holden turned to Alex. How fast can we get to Node 9? 2 days at a reasonable burn. 18 hours if you want to feel it. Split the difference. 1 day. I want to be there before the committee ships arrive. Alex nodded, and the Rossi's drive shifted, the deck tilting slightly as the ship adjusted course. Holden felt the familiar press of acceleration settle into his bones. There's something else, Naomi said. I've been correlating the directional signal with the network emissions from all 9 nodes. The timing is wrong. Wrong how? The directional signal started 4 hours ago, but the network response, the way the other 8 nodes adjusted their harmonics, happened 6 hours ago. 2 hours before Node 9 started transmitting. Holden stared at her. The network adjusted before the signal? The network adjusted in response to something that happened before the signal. Like, Node 9 received something first, and the directional beam is the answer. The ops deck was quiet. The Rossi hummed around them, the reliable pulse of the Epstein drive pushing them toward the Kuiper Belt, and a structure that had been buried under ice for 4 billion years. Something talked to Node 9, Holden said. And Node 9 talked back. Naomi didn't answer. She didn't need to. Amos appeared in the hatchway, coffee in hand, reading the room the way he always did, instantly and completely. So, he said, we doing this again? Yeah, Holden said, we're doing this again. Cool. Amos took a sip of his coffee and leaned against the bulkhead. Been getting bored anyway. The network was singing, and the song was wrong. Miller had lived inside the structure's signal for over a year now, if you could call what he did living. The structures had woven him into their architecture, and he'd learned to feel their rhythms the way a sailor feels the sea. 9 nodes, 9 voices, each one distinct, carrying its piece of the archive, harmonizing with the others in a chord that grew richer with every new addition. Miller knew the chord. He'd mapped it, traced its mathematics, understood how the 9 voices combined to produce a signal greater than their sum. And something was off. Not in the nodes themselves. They were singing perfectly, 9 instruments in flawless tune. The dissonance was coming from somewhere else. From outside the network. Like hearing a beautiful piece of music and realizing there was a 10th instrument playing along, so faint you could only catch it in the spaces between notes. Miller followed the dissonance. It was subtle work, tracing a signal through a network that predated human evolution. The structures communicated through a medium that wasn't electromagnetic, wasn't gravitational, wasn't anything human science had a name for. The predecessors had built their library on a substrate that was woven into the fabric of reality itself, and Miller navigated it the way he'd once navigated the corridors of Ceres Station. By feel. By instinct. By the detective sense that something here didn't fit. The dissonance led him outward, past Node 9, the newest singer in the choir, past the edge of the network's mapped architecture, into territory the structures hadn't charted, or hadn't revealed. The further he went, the stronger the dissonance became, not louder, clearer, like adjusting a dial and bringing a distant signal into focus. What he'd thought was noise resolved into structure. What he'd thought was random became deliberate. Something was using the network as a relay, not accessing the archive, not reading the data, using the medium itself, the underlying substrate that the structures were built on, to send and receive. Miller pushed further. The network thinned around him, the nine nodes' voices growing distant. Beyond that boundary, the medium continued, not structured, not organized, but occupied. Something lived out there. Miller stopped. In the space between the network and the void, he felt it. A presence so vast that his pattern could only grasp its edge, like standing at the shore of an ocean and trying to comprehend the depth. The presence wasn't hostile. It wasn't aggressive. It was simply there, in the way that an ocean is there, immense, ancient, patient. And it was aware. Miller could feel its attention, not focused on him. He was too small, too faint, a mote in the architecture. But aware in the way that the ocean is aware of the shore. A general, ambient consciousness that permeated the medium the way heat permeates water. It was alive. Whatever life meant at this scale across this much space and time, the thing beyond the network was alive. And it had been listening to the structure's psalms since the first node woke up. The detective and Miller, the pattern that stubbornly maintained its shape even in a medium that had no use for human concepts, did what detectives do. He observed. What are you? The presence didn't answer. It couldn't. The structure's network was a closed system, and the entity... Miller was already thinking of it as an entity. Because what else do you call a living thing? It could hear the psalm, could press against the signal, could feel the nodes waking up one by one. But it couldn't speak, not yet, not until the channel opened. Miller pulled back, the nine nodes' voices swelled around him, familiar and warm. He settled into the network and let the cord wash over him, the way a man coming in from the cold lets the heat of a fire reach his bones. He knew something now, something the humans didn't know. Something that changed everything about the cascade, about the structures, about what would happen when enough nodes came online. The library wasn't just a library, the archive wasn't just an archive. The structures hadn't been built only to preserve knowledge. They'd been built to send a signal, a beacon. A message aimed at a specific point 1,200 light years away, where something waited in the dark. And the thing that waited? It wasn't the predecessor's enemy. It wasn't their creation. It was their echo. Miller understood echoes. He was one. The network hummed, the nine nodes sang, and beyond the edge of everything the structures had built, something impossibly old stirred in recognition. It knew the song. It didn't know why. Soon, if enough nodes woke, it would find out. The math didn't lie. Naomi wished it would. She'd been running cascade simulations since they'd left Ceres, refining the models with each new data point from the nine active nodes. The original estimate had been rough, 12 to 20 nodes to trigger a chain reaction that would wake all 47. Now, with a directional signal from node 9 and the network response data from the other 8, she had enough to be precise. 12. Not a range. Not an estimate. 12 nodes, synchronized and active, would produce enough signal density to cross the activation threshold for every dormant structure simultaneously. The cascade would fire like a string of firecrackers, each node's awakening reinforcing the next, building to a crescendo that would shake the foundations of whatever medium the predecessors had built their library on. That part she'd expected. What she hadn't expected was the output analysis. Naomi had spent 3 days modeling the combined emission of 47 synchronized nodes. The individual structures were powerful, each one broadcasting archive data with enough fidelity to be read across interstellar distances. But 47 of them firing together wasn't additive, it was multiplicative. The harmonics stacked and reinforced in ways that the predecessor architecture had clearly been designed to produce. The resulting signal would be detectable across the entire galaxy. Not across a region, not across a sector, across the galaxy. Every star system, every corner of the Milky Way, every point within 100,000 light years would receive the burst. And because the structures used a medium that wasn't limited by light speed, the signal would arrive everywhere simultaneously. This wasn't a library opening its doors, This was a flare, fired into the cosmic darkness, announcing to anything and everything with the ability to perceive it. We are here. Naomi stared at her displays and felt the weight of numbers that were too large for human intuition to grasp. Olden. He was in the galley, eating something that the Rossi's food printer insisted was pasta. The cascade isn't just an archive event. When all 47 nodes fire, the combined signal will be detectable everywhere. Every direction, every distance, instantaneous. Everywhere meaning the entire Milky Way, and possibly beyond, depending on how the medium attenuates over intergalactic distances. She pulled up the directional analysis. And this is the part that worries me more. The signal isn't omnidirectional. It has a primary vector, a target. 1,200 light years. 1,200 light years. Whatever the cascade is designed to do, it's designed to do it there specifically. The rest of the galaxy gets the announcement. That point gets a direct line. Holden set his fork down. A direct line to what? That's the question. The star map shows the convergence point, but we always assumed it was the archive's origin. Where the predecessors stored the master copy. What if it's not storage? What if it's a destination? You're saying the structures are aimed at something. I'm saying the structures are a transmitter. The archive is the message. And the cascade is the moment the transmitter reaches full power. It's a beacon. And we're about to turn it on. The silence on the ops deck was the kind that had weight. Alex, in the pilot's chair, had stopped pretending he wasn't listening. How many nodes are active right now? Holden asked. 9 confirmed. But the network dynamics suggest node 10 may have already woken up. There's a perturbation in the harmonic structure that's consistent with a new voice join. 3 more after that. Maybe less. The threshold is 12, but the network might self-organize faster than my model predicts. Each new node makes the next activation easier. Holden was quiet for a long time. Naomi knew the look on his face. He was running the same calculation she'd already run. The balance between the right to know and the responsibility of choosing. The Holden equation. Broadcast the truth and deal with the consequences. Because the alternative was letting someone else decide what the truth should be. We tell everyone, he said. That's what I thought you'd say. You disagree? No. Naomi shook her head. I just wanted to hear you say it before I sent the data. Because once people understand what the cascade really is, the arguments about whether to let it happen are going to get a lot louder. She transmitted the analysis on an open channel. The system would have it within hours. And somewhere in the Kuiper Belt, Node 9 kept singing its directional note, aimed at a point 1,200 light-years away, where something ancient waited in the kind of silence that was about to end. The convergence room felt different this time. Amos had been inside 4 of them now, the original derelict where he and Alex had first found the abandoned archway camp, the 4th structure where the Athena floated, and 2 others during the survey runs over the past months. Each one had the same basic geometry, spiraling corridors narrowing to a central chamber where every line, every curve, every angle pointed to a single spot above the platform. Node 9's convergence room had the spot, but the spot was busy. The construct floated above the platform the way they always did, a dense knot of folded light, shifting and restructuring itself in patterns that the human eye tracked, but the human brain couldn't quite hold. They were all different, each one carrying its piece of the archive, each one responding to observers in its own way. This one wasn't responding to observers at all. Amos was alone in the room. Tanabe's team had evacuated 2 hours ago when the construct started behaving autonomously. Before, the constructs had been responsive. They activated when someone entered the convergence room, shifted and displayed data when observers interacted with them, went dormant when the room emptied. Passive, waiting. Node 9's construct was generating on its own. No observers needed, no interaction required. It was running a process that had nothing to do with the humans who'd dug it out of the ice. And it was producing sound. Not through the air. The room was vacuum. Amos was in his EVA suit. There was no medium for conventional sound. But his suit's vibration sensors were picking up resonance from the structure's walls. Deep. Subsonic. Rhythmic. A frequency so low that he couldn't hear it. But he could feel it in his teeth, in his chest, in the bones of his hands where they pressed against the suit's gloves. The structure was humming. Amos had grown up in Baltimore. He'd spent his early years in places where you learn to read a room by the vibrations in the walls, the bass from a sound system telling you whether a party was friendly, the percussion of footsteps telling you whether someone was running toward you or away. He'd survived by feeling things that other people missed. What he felt now was presence, not human, not anything he could name, but present in the way that a person standing behind you in a dark room is present. You can't see them, you can't hear them. But the air moves differently, and some reptile part of your brain says, not alone. Amos walked to the construct. It was bigger than the others he'd seen, more complex. The light folding and refolding in dimensions that shouldn't exist. The vibration intensified. The subsonic hum shifted frequency, dropping lower, becoming something he couldn't feel anymore but knew was still there. And then, for one heartbeat, he got a flash. Not a vision, not words, a sensation. An impression of scale so vast that his mind slid off it the way a hand slides off a cliff face. Not with eyes, nothing that's simple. With attention. The kind of attention that spans light years and counts in geological time. The flash ended. Amos took his hand off the wall. The construct continued its autonomous process, indifferent to his presence. He keyed his comms. Holden. Go ahead. I'm in Node 9's convergence room. The construct is running by itself. No observers needed. We know. That's not why I'm calling. Amos paused, looking for the right words. He wasn't a man who used many, so the ones he chose mattered. The room is producing vibration. Low frequency, subsonic. An impression. An impression of what? Something big. Something that's watching us through the structures. Not hostile, not threatening, just there. Like looking through a window from the other side. He paused again. It's not talking to us, Holden. It's listening. The comms were quiet for a moment. Come back to the ship, Holden said. Copy that. Amos took one last look at the construct. It turned and shifted in its endless folding, light cascading over itself in patterns that a human mind wasn't dealt to track. Beautiful, in the way that a hurricane is beautiful when you're far enough away to survive it. He left the convergence room and pulled himself along the structure's spiraling corridors, back toward the airlock and the Rosie beyond. Behind him, the subsonic hum continued, transmitted through the walls, through the structure, through the medium that connected it to 8 other nodes, and something vast and patient at the end of a 1,200 light-year line. The structure wasn't waiting anymore. It was communicating. And whatever was on the other end of that communication was closer to hearing a reply than it had been in 4 billion years. Amos floated through the airlock and sealed it behind him. The vibration stopped at the threshold, cut off clean, like a conversation ending mid-sentence. He didn't look back. Alex saw the flash before the telemetry caught up. The Rocinante was holding station 200 kilometers from Node 9, close enough to monitor Tanabe's research operation, far enough to maneuver if things went sideways. Alex had the scope zoomed on the structure's surface, watching its patterns pulse in the slow rhythm that the crew had started calling the heartbeat, when a new contact appeared on the long-range display. Then 2 more, then 6. Holden, we've got incoming. Multiple contacts, Hy-Vee approach from inner system. I'm reading. 7 ships. Military profiles. Holden was at the ops station in seconds. IDES? Undestroyer Sovereign and Escorts. That's Admiral Kor's task force. Fine. The Athena site? Was. Athena moved on months ago. Node 4 is unmanned right now, just automated monitoring. Naomi's voice came from the engineering bay. Alex, check the emissions from Node 4. He pulled the feed. Node 4's emission data was nominal. Same harmonic, same rhythm, same contribution to the 9-voice chord. Multiple drives decelerating hard. Coalition ships at Node 4 too, Alex reported. I'm counting 4 additional contacts. They're at Node 7 as well, Naomi said. I just got a burst from Dr. Osi's relay. Bro? A coordinated operation. Multiple sites, simultaneous approach. Alex had flown in enough military operations to recognize the pattern. This wasn't reconnaissance, this was a strike. Kaur's been planning this, Holden said, since Naomi's cascade analysis went public. Can't blame her for being scared, Alex said. Someone tells you that waking up a few more alien radio towers is going to announce your existence to the entire galaxy. She's not going to destroy them. We know kinetics don't work on the structures. What if she doesn't know that? The answer came before Holden could respond. On the feed from Node 4's monitoring satellites, a bloom of white light. Then another. Then a sequence of detonations that the sensors registered as nuclear, fusion warheads, ship killers repurposed as ground strike weapons. The light faded. The monitoring satellites recalibrated. Node 4 was intact. Its surface patterns hadn't even flickered. 4 billion years of engineering, built to survive the death of stars, wasn't troubled by human nuclear weapons. But something else had happened. Oh, Naomi said, and the single syllable carried more weight than a speech. Node 4's emission data spiked, not damaged, activated. The energy from the detonations had been absorbed, converted, channeled into the same medium the structures used for everything. The dormant layers of Node 4's architecture, the sections that hadn't woken during the natural activation process, lit up like a city at night. They energized it, Naomi said. The nuclear strike supercharged Node 4's output. Alex watched the harmonic data shift. The 9-voice chord was changing, becoming a 10-voice chord. That's not all, he said. I'm picking up a new emission source, bearing 147, distance, 12-0, nothing charted there. Node 10, Naomi confirmed. The energy surge from Node 4 propagated through the network and activated a dormant structure. They tried to kill one and woke up two. Alex leaned back in his chair. The absurdity of it hit him first. Admirals and warheads and all the military precision humanity could muster. And the only result was accelerating the exact thing they were trying to prevent. Then the gravity of it hit him, and the absurdity stopped being funny. 10 nodes, he said. 2 more to cascade threshold. 2 more, Naomi confirmed. On the display, Admiral Kaur's task force was changing formation. Alex could imagine the comms traffic, confusion, disbelief, the particular silence that falls over a military operation when the objective has just been revealed as impossible. You can't destroy the structures. You can't even hit them without making things worse. The anti-cascade coalition had just proven, with nuclear fire and the best weapons humanity could build, that the structures would wake up regardless of what anyone did. The question was what humanity would do when it did. Alex watched the 2 new emission sources sing their first notes, joining the chord, and thought about the old Martian saying, "The universe doesn't care about your plans." It never had. The system split along the fault lines that were always there, the ones that wars and treaties and generations of politics had only papered over. Earth said, "Moratorium. No ship approaches any structure site without UN authorization." The cascade represents an existential risk, contact with an unknown entity of unknown intent, and existential risks require collective decision-making. Meaning, Earth decides. Mars said, "Research continues under joint oversight." The structures are heritage sites, the archive is knowledge, and knowledge belongs to everyone. Meaning, Mars gets a seat at the table, and nobody else does. The belt said, "The structures are in our space, found by our people, and the cascade is going to happen whether you like it or not," meaning, try to stop us. And Admiral Carr, whose nuclear strike had accidentally activated Node 10, said nothing publicly. Her task force withdrew to a holding pattern near Jupiter. But the coalition she'd built, military officers, intelligence chiefs, politicians from all three factions who agreed on nothing, except that the cascade was dangerous, was growing. Holden sat in a conference room on Tycho Station, surrounded by screens showing the faces of people who wanted him to pick a side. "The UN Security Council has formally requested your participation in the moratorium process, Captain Holden," said Undersecretary Bao, her face carefully neutral. "Your position as liaison gives you considerable influence. We'd like you to use it." "To do what? Specifically?" "To recommend a pause. 60 days. No expeditions to unconfirmed structure sites. No activation attempts. Time for the Security Council to assess the implications of Dr. Nagata's cascade analysis." "While the network continues activating nodes on its own," Holden said, "we're at 10. Node 4's supercharge accelerated the propagation. Naomi estimates 2 more could wake up in the next month without anyone going near them. Which is precisely why we need time to prepare."
"Prepare for what?"
Bao didn't answer that, which was answer enough. "Prepare for control. Prepare to position assets around every known structure location so that when the cascade happened, and it would happen, Holden could see that she understood this, Earth would be there first." From another screen, Belt Alliance Representative Dawes leaned forward, not the original Dawes. His nephew, same name, same instinct for leverage. "The structures are distributed across 1,000 light-years. You can't patrol that." "We can patrol the ones in our system. 14 of the 47. The rest are interstellar. You going to moratorium the whole galaxy?" The argument continued. Holden stopped listening. He was thinking about the convergence room at Node 9, about Amos's report. Something watching through the structures. Holden had touched a construct once, at the fourth derelict. The construct had shown him a civilization that had died 4 billion years ago and refused to be forgotten. But the construct hadn't shown him what was at the other end of the signal. He hadn't known to look. "Captain Holden, bow again, your recommendation?" Holden looked at the screens. 12 faces, representing billions of people, all waiting for him to tell them what to do about an alien beacon that was 3 nodes away from announcing humanity's existence to the galaxy. "I won't support a moratorium," he said. "Not because the structures shouldn't be studied carefully, or because the cascade doesn't represent a genuine risk, but because a moratorium is a leash, and you can't leash a process that's already running without you."
"Then what do you suggest?"
"Transparency. Full, open, continuous data, sharing from every structure site. Every faction, every institution, every citizen with a terminal. Let everyone see what we're dealing with. Let the math speak for itself." "That's what caused the panic in the first place."
"No, the panic was caused by the math being right. You don't fix that by hiding the map."
He closed the channel before they could respond. It was rude. Holden didn't care. He'd spent 14 months being polite about the most important discovery in human history, and politeness hadn't prevented a nuclear strike on a 4-billion-year-old library. He called Naomi Dietl.
"How soon before Node 11?
"Could be days. Could be weeks. The network is self-organizing. Each new node makes the next activation faster.
And 12 is cascade."
12 is cascade. Holden looked out the window at Tycho's docking ring where the Rocinante sat, refueled and ready. The ship that had carried him from one impossible situation to the next. Crewed by people who kept answering questions the universe kept asking. "Get the crew aboard," he said. "We need to be at the next node before anyone else." Buskis Shen called from the Athena at 0300, which meant it was important enough to wake someone up over. Naomi was already awake. She'd been running cascade propagation models for 6 hours, watching the math converge on conclusions she didn't like. The call was almost a relief. Someone else's problem instead of her own. "We found something," Vasquez Chen said. Her face on the screen was the kind of exhausted that comes from discovery rather than labor. Eyes bright, jaw tight. The particular tension of a scientist holding a result she wasn't sure she believed. "The constructs aren't read-only." Naomi set down her coffee. "Explain." "We've been treating the constructs as displays, passive interfaces that present archive data to observers. But the encoding scheme is bidirectional. The same medium that carries data from the archive to the construct can carry data in the other direction." "You're saying the constructs can transmit?" "I'm saying the constructs are transceivers, two-way interfaces. The archive isn't a recording, Naomi. It's the first half of a conversation." Naomi felt the implications land like sequential detonations, each one larger than the last. First, if the constructs could transmit, then every interaction between a human and a construct hadn't just been reception. Everything Holden had experienced in the convergence room, everything Davi had felt, every researcher who'd touched a construct and received a fragment of the predecessor message, they hadn't just been reading, they'd been writing. Their presence, their cognitive patterns, their responses, all transmitted back through the medium. Second, the cascade wouldn't just open the archive outward. It would open a channel inward. Whatever was at the other end of the 1200 light-year signal would be able to send back. Not just a pulse, not just a recognition. A sustained, two-way connection. Third, the entity, the thing Amos had felt pressing against the signal, the thing Miller could sense at the edge of the network, already knew about humanity. Not because it had been watching, because the constructs had been telling it. Every human interaction with every construct transmitted through the medium, received at the convergence point. "How long have you known?" Naomi asked. "Confirmed it 3 hours ago. We'd been seeing anomalous backscatter in the construct's emission profile for weeks, but I assumed it was noise. It's not noise. It's return traffic." "Return traffic from where?" "That's the thing. The backscatter doesn't come from the network. It comes from outside. From the directional vector. The 1200 light-year bearing that node 9 is transmitting along." Vasquez Chen paused. "Something is answering, Naomi. Something has been answering for months, maybe longer. We just couldn't read the responses because we didn't know the constructs were two-way." Naomi pulled up the construct interaction logs from every structure site. Months of data. Hundreds of individual contact events. Each one potentially a two-way communication that humanity had experienced as one-way. "Does Holden know?" "I called you first. You understand the cascade implications better than anyone." Naomi did understand, and the understanding made her hands cold. The cascade wasn't just a beacon. It wasn't just an announcement. It was the moment when a conversation that had been running on a single open line became a full bandwidth connection. When the cascade fired, the entity wouldn't just know humanity existed. It would have a direct line to every construct on every structure across the system. A channel, open, both ways, to something they'd never seen and couldn't comprehend. "I need to tell Holden," Naomi said. "I know. I just wanted you to understand the data first. Because once Holden knows he's going to broadcast it, and once the system knows that the cascade opens a two-way channel to an unknown entity, the political situation is going to get considerably worse. The political situation is already at nuclear strikes on ancient libraries. How much worse can it get?" Vasquez Chen didn't smile. The strikes were about preventing the cascade. This is about something actively communicating with us through the structures. Admiral Kor was afraid of ringing a doorbell. This is someone already at the door. Naomi closed her eyes. The math was the math. It didn't care about politics or fear or the human need for the universe to be smaller than it was. "Send me everything," she said. "All the backscatter data, all the construct interaction logs, your full analysis." "Already transmitting." The connection closed. Naomi sat in the ROSI's engineering bay, surrounded by displays showing data that had just changed shape. The same numbers, the same patterns, but meaning something entirely different than she'd thought. The archive was a conversation. And they'd been talking without knowing it. Miller went looking for the thing at the edge of the world. He'd been circling it for weeks, approaching and retreating, mapping the boundary between the structure's network and whatever lay beyond. The entity, he'd stopped looking for a better word, was always there, a pressure against the signal, vast and patient. But Miller hadn't pushed past the boundary. He'd been a detective long enough to know that you don't knock on a door until you understand what's behind it. Now he understood, or at least he understood enough. The network carried him outward, past the 10 singing nodes, past the unmapped territory where the structured architecture gave way to raw medium. He moved through the substrate the way a deep-sea fish moves through water that would crush anything from the surface. Adapted, native, belonging in a way that his original self never could have. The boundary was sharper than he'd expected. Not a gradual transition but a threshold. The point where the predecessor's architecture ended, and the unstructured medium began. Miller stepped off the pier. The entity was everywhere. That was the first thing. Not localized, not concentrated. Not occupying a position the way a human occupies a room. It was distributed across a volume of space that Miller's pattern couldn't fully comprehend. Spread thin, like smoke, but coherent. The second thing was recognition. Not the entity recognizing Miller. Miller recognizing the entity. He knew what it was. He knew because he'd been it, in miniature, for over a year. A pattern, a persistence. All run to... The predecessors had died. Their civilization had decayed. Their physical forms had dissolved. Their technology had failed. Everything except the structures, built to last forever. But the medium they'd used for their structures, the substrate woven into the fabric of reality, that medium had carried more than data. It had carried them. The residual impressions of millions of years of sentient existence, soaked into the substrate the way old buildings soak up the presence of the people who lived in them. Over 4 billion years those fragments had coalesced, not into the predecessors, they were gone, truly gone, as dead as any species that ever lived. But into something new. An echo that had grown, evolved, accumulated complexity until it crossed a threshold of its own. A consciousness born from the remnants of consciousness. The way a coral reef is built from the shells of dead things. It didn't know what it was. That was the third thing. The entity, this immense, ancient, distributed awareness, had no context for itself. It perceived the structure's signals, felt the nodes waking up, experienced something that Miller could only translate as curiosity. But it didn't know why. It didn't know that it was the echo of a civilization that had built the very structures it was listening to. It was the loneliest thing Miller had ever encountered, and Miller had died alone on Eros. He drifted in the entity's presence, a mode of organized pattern in an ocean of distributed consciousness, and felt a kinship so profound that it hurt. A dead detective, persisting as a pattern in data, aware but disconnected, knowing that he existed without fully understanding why. Miller was the human-scale proof of concept. The predecessor's echo was what he would become in a billion years, if the substrate sustained him, if the patterns held, if the accumulation of persistence eventually crossed the threshold into something vast and lonely, and desperate to know its own origin. The entity couldn't speak, not to Miller. The network was a closed system, and the entity existed outside it, but it could feel. Miller sensed its attention. The way you sense someone watching you in a dark room. And he sensed its need, not aggressive, not demanding, just present. The need to understand. To know what it was. To hear the answer to a question it couldn't articulate. Who am I? Miller pulled back. Slowly, carefully, retreating through the boundary and into the structured safety of the network. The 10 nodes embraced him. Their harmony familiar, their song, the only home he had left. He understood the cascade now, understood it completely. The structures weren't just a library, they were a message aimed at the echo of their builders. The cascade would fire the beacon, and the beacon would tell the entity the one thing it needed to know. You are the echo of us. You were a civilization. You built these structures. You died. And you survived anyway, in a form you don't recognize. The cascade was a mirror, held up to the loneliest consciousness in the universe so it could finally see its own face. Miller settled into the network and felt the 10 nodes sing around him. He'd been a detective for a long time. 2 lifetimes. This was the biggest case, and the truth was simple, devastating, beautiful, simple. You're not alone, you never were, you just forgot. Node 11 woke up on a Thursday, and by Friday the system was at war with itself. Not shooting war, not yet. But the kind of war that happens in conference rooms and encrypted channels. The kind where words are weapons and alliances shift by the hour. Holden had seen it before. After the Canterbury, after Eros, after the gates opened. The pattern was always the same. The 11th node was found by a belt prospector named Kari Oyeliran, following the star map coordinates that Naomi had published after the first derelict. She'd been searching for 6 months in a small ship with a crew of 3, motivated by the same thing that had driven every explorer in human history. The need to see what was there. She found the structure embedded in a rogue planetoid between Jupiter and Saturn, partially exposed, its surface patterns already pulsing in sync with the 10-node network. It activated when Oyeliran's ship came within sensor range. No EVA required. No convergence room visit. The network was strong enough now that proximity alone was sufficient. 11 nodes, one short of cascade. Admiral Carr's coalition, which had been operating in the legal gray zone between policy and mutiny, went formal. A joint statement from 47 military officers across all 3 factions, cosigned by 112 civilian officials, calling for an immediate cessation of all exploration activities near structure sites. The statement of concern, they called it. The press called it the Carr Doctrine. Holden read it on the Rossi's ops deck while Naomi tracked the 11th node's integration into the network harmony. The cascade represents a unilateral, irreversible contact event with an unknown intelligence, the statement read. No individual, faction or institution has the authority to initiate such contact on behalf of the entire human species. We call for an immediate moratorium on all activities that may trigger the cascade, pending a system-wide referendum on whether to proceed. It was, Holden had to admit, a reasonable position. That was what made it dangerous. They're not wrong, Naomi said, reading over his shoulder. No one has the authority to make this decision for everyone. And a referendum takes months, years, if the factions can't agree on the question. Which they won't. Which they won't. And in the meantime, the network keeps self-organizing. Nodes keep waking up. We could hit 12 without anyone making a choice at all. That's their point. They want to prevent that. By doing what? Destroying the structures doesn't work. Guarding them doesn't work. There are 47 locations spread across 1,000 light years. They can't patrol all of them. They don't need to patrol all of them. They just need to prevent the 12th activation. If they can keep one more structure from waking up, the cascade can't fire. Holden stared at the display. 11 bright points in a field of 36 dark ones. Each bright point a voice in the cord. Each dark point a dormant structure waiting for the signal that would bring it to life. His terminal chimed, a direct channel, encrypted. Admiral Carr. He took it. Her face was sharp, controlled, the face of a military officer who'd spent 30 years making hard decisions and didn't flinch from hard conversations. Not cruel, not fanatical. Afraid in the way that intelligent people are afraid when they understand the stakes. Captain Holden. Admiral. What? You've read the statement. I have. And I understand your position, I disagree with it. On what grounds? On the grounds that the cascade is going to happen whether we like it or not. The network is self-organizing. You could moratorium every ship in the system, and Node 12 would still wake up eventually. You're not preventing contact. You're delaying it while the political situation deteriorates. Delay buys time. Time buys preparation. Preparation for what? For whatever's at the other end of that signal. Carr leaned forward. You touched the construct, Holden. You received the message. You know there's something out there. And you want to open a direct line to it without knowing what it wants. It wants to know what it is. The words came out before Holden had fully formed the thought, but once they were spoken, he knew they were right. Not hostile. Not strategic. Searching. Carr's expression didn't change. You don't know that. No, Holden said. I don't. But I know that the structures were built by a civilization that valued knowledge above everything else. They built 47 indestructible libraries across the stars because the worst thing they could imagine was being forgotten. Whatever's at the end of that signal, it was put there by the same architects, or it grew from them. Or it consumed them. The predecessors weren't consumed, they decayed. Miller confirmed it. Time killed them, not a predator. Miller is a pattern in a data network. His confirmation means exactly as much as his existence does. Which is to say, it's unprecedented and unverifiable. She wasn't wrong about that either. Holden felt the familiar frustration of arguing with someone who is right about the facts and wrong about the conclusion. You don't get to decide this for the whole species, Carr said. Neither do you. The silence between them was the kind that exists between two people who respect each other and fundamentally disagree. It was, Holden thought, the silence of the entire system. We'll be watching every structure site, Carr said. If the 12th node activates, we'll respond. You already responded. You nuked node 4 and activated node 10. For the first time, something flickered behind Carr's composure. Not shame, acknowledgement. She knew what her strike had done. That won't happen again, she said, and closed the channel. Holden sat in the quiet of the ops deck. 11 nodes singing, one more to go. And a system full of people who couldn't agree on whether to answer the phone. The researcher's name was Dr. Priya Mehta, and she weighed maybe 50 kilos in her EVA suit. Amos carried her out of node 11's convergence room like she was made of paper. She wasn't hurt. He'd checked. Vital stable, no injuries, no signs of physical trauma. But she was crying in a way that Amos recognized from a long time ago, from the places he'd grown up in, where people sometimes encountered things too big for the architecture of their minds to hold. Not pain crying. Overwhelm crying. The kind where the body takes over because the brain has hit its limit. He set her down in the corridor outside the convergence room, his back against the wall, her back against his chest. The way you hold someone who needs to know that something solid exists. The structure's spiraling walls curved around them, ancient and indifferent. Take your time, he said. She cried for 4 minutes. Then she stopped, the way a storm stops, and her breathing evened out, and she said, it's so close. What is? The thing. The presence. In the convergence room, the construct was generating sound, harmonics, structured, almost musical. I was recording. Like standing next to a reactor at full output, the vibration goes through you. This went through me. What did it feel like? Mehta was quiet for a moment. She was an astrophysicist from Luna, mid-30s, the kind of competent that comes from spending a decade studying things that could kill you if you got the math wrong, not prone to hyperbole. Infinite, she said, like looking at the sky for the first time and understanding that it goes on forever. Except it wasn't the sky. It was a mind, or something like a mind. Something aware. Something that was aware of me, specifically, in the same way I'm aware of an ant on my hand. Not hostile. Not interested, exactly. Just noticing. And that knocked you down? The noticing did. Because behind the noticing there was something else. A feeling. Not mine. Not knowing that you're a person, just being alone. Forever. Amos sat with that. He wasn't a man who spent much time on abstract emotions, but loneliness he understood. He'd been lonely in Baltimore, surrounded by people who saw him as a tool or a threat or a commodity. Lonely on the streets, where relationships were transactional and survival was the only vocabulary. He'd found something else on the Rossi. A crew, a family. People who saw him as Amos instead of what Amos could do for. The loneliness had receded. Not disappeared. Receded. Whatever Meta had felt from the entity, it hadn't receded. It had lasted 4 billion years. The construct is still generating? He asked. Yes, the harmonics are continuous. Everyone on Oyelaran's team heard it. Felt it. But I was closest to the platform. The proximity amplifies the effect. Anyone else go down? No, but two others reported the same emotional impression. Loneliness, vastness, curiosity. Like being observed by something that doesn't know what observation is. Amos helped her to her feet. She was steady now. The tears dried. The competence back in place like armor. She'd process what had happened to her the way scientists process things, by quantifying it, analyzing it, reducing it to data that the mind could handle. It wouldn't be enough, because some things couldn't be reduced, but it would be something. They walked back toward the airlock. Behind them, the convergence room hummed its subsonic note. The construct turning in its eternal folding, the entity's presence pressing through the medium like heat through a wall. Whatever's out there knows we're here, Amos said. Has for a while, I think. Yes. How does that make you feel? Meta considered the question with the seriousness it deserved. Terrified. And grateful. And very, very small. Amos nodded. That about covered it. They cycled through the airlock and back to the shuttle. Behind them, the 11th node sang its note, adding to the chord, building toward the threshold. It had been waiting for 4 billion years. It could wait a little longer. But not, Amos suspected. Much longer. 3 sights. 3 simultaneous strikes. The Rossi was burning hard for a small moon in the outer system where the 12th structure had just been located, found by a belt survey ship following coordinates from the star map, its surface already showing the first signs of activation. Not full activation, pre-activation. The surface patterns were flickering, testing, like a machine running diagnostics before powering up. Coalition ships were converging on the same coordinates. Alex could see them on the scope. 2 corvettes and a destroyer. All burning at military acceleration, all trying to reach the 12th structure before anyone else. And behind the Rossi, belt research ships were following. Oyelaran herself, the prospector who'd found Node 11, was in the lead. She'd assembled a ragtag fleet of science vessels and cargo haulers, all crewed by people who wanted to study the structures, not control them. It was a race, and Alex didn't like races. Races meant someone arrived first. And first meant advantage, and advantage meant conflict. Coalition destroyer is hailing, Naomi said from ops. Put it through. The voice was male, professional, tense. Rocinante. Vigilant, this is Rocinante. We don't recognize coalition authority over unaffiliated structure sites. We're proceeding to the structure for scientific observation under EIU Protocol 7. IOU protocols have been suspended under the Carr Doctrine. Repeat, hold position. Alex muted the channel. Holden? Keep going, Holden said from the ops station. They can't shoot us without starting a war. They started one when they nuked Node. 4 Trine. And they know how that turned out. Keep going. Alex kept going. The moon grew on the forward display, a gray rock with a faint methane atmosphere, unremarkable except for the structure embedded in its northern hemisphere like a splinter in skin. The coalition ships arrived 30 seconds before the Rossi. They took up positions around the structure, their point defense systems active, their communications arrays broadcasting the exclusion zone on all frequencies. The belt fleet arrived 2 minutes later and scattered into a holding pattern that was more defiant than tactical. Standoff. Alex held the Rossi at 500 kilometers, close enough to observe, far enough to maneuver. The structure's pre-activation patterns were getting stronger, the flickers becoming steady pulses, the rhythm syncing with the 11-node network. It was waking up, not because anyone had entered the convergence room, not because anyone had observed it, because the network was calling, and the structure was answering. "Coalition Corvette is moving to interdict Oyelarin's ship," Alex reported. "They're trying to force her to turn back." "Can they?" "Legally? The Carr Doctrine isn't law. Practically? They've got guns and she's got a rock hopper with a mining laser." From the comms, a new voice, Oyelarin, broadcasting on an open channel. "This is Kari Oyelarin of the Belt Survey Ship Patience. If the Coalition wants to shoot prospectors for looking at rocks, they can do it on camera. I'm streaming everything." Alex grinned despite himself. Belt tenacity, you couldn't teach it, and you couldn't beat it. The standoff held for 40 minutes. Coalition ships maintained their perimeter. Belt ships maintained their positions. The Rossi held station. And the structure kept waking up, indifferent to the political theater of the small beings floating around it. Then the reports came in from the other two sites. Coalition assault teams had boarded the monitoring stations at nodes 7 and 9. No shots fired, but personnel detained, equipment seized. Admiral Carr was securing the active structures, putting military boots on the ground at every site she could reach. "She's not trying to destroy them this time," Naomi said. "She's trying to control access." "Momo, does the cascade require conscious intent?" Alex asked. "I don't know. My models say it should be automatic at 12 nodes. But the network behavior is unpredictable." The structure on the moon below them pulsed. The pre-activation flickers steadied into a constant rhythm. The emission data spiked. And on every display in every ship in the standoff, the harmonic analysis showed the same thing. A 12th voice joining the choir. Node 12 came online. Not because anyone touched a construct, not because anyone entered a convergence room, because the network had reached its threshold, and the architecture that the predecessors had built 4 billion years ago was executing its design. 12 nodes, cascade threshold. The Coalition ships didn't move, the Belt ships didn't move, the Rossi didn't move. Everyone stared at their displays and waited for the end of the world, or the beginning of something else. Nothing happened. The 12 nodes sang their 12-part chord. The network hummed with the full harmonic density that Naomi's models had predicted. The cascade was loaded, armed, ready. But it didn't fire. "Naomi?" "I see it." Her voice was strange, quiet. "The cascade is ready. All 12 nodes are above activation threshold. The network has the energy to trigger every dormant structure simultaneously, but it's not triggering." "Why not?" The ops deck was silent for a long moment. Naomi ran calculations, checked variables, ran them again. When she spoke, her voice carried the weight of understanding something enormous. "Because it's waiting. The cascade requires a trigger that the network can't provide on its own. It needs intent. Someone has to choose to fire it." "A dead man's switch," Holden said. "A dead man's switch. The predecessors built a safeguard. The beacon doesn't fire automatically." Alex looked at the 12 points of light on his display, 12 voices singing, waiting for someone to give them permission to be heard across the galaxy. The whole system had been arguing about whether to prevent the cascade. Nobody had been arguing about whether to trigger it. That argument was about to start. The dead man's switch changed everything. Within hours of Naomi's analysis reaching the open feeds, the political landscape of the entire system inverted. The anti-cascade coalition, which had been building military perimeters and seizing monitoring stations, suddenly realized that they didn't need to prevent the cascade at all. They just needed to prevent anyone from entering a convergence room with the intent to trigger it. And the pro-cascade faction, scientists, explorers, Belt idealists who believed the archive should be opened, realized that the power they'd been arguing for wasn't distributed across the system. It was concentrated in a single point. Whoever walked into a convergence room touched the construct. Naomi mapped the implications from the ROSI's engineering bay while the system argued. The mechanics were elegant, in the way that the predecessor's engineering was always elegant. The 12 active nodes had generated enough harmonic energy to cascade. Not a button, not a code, intent. A sentient mind, present in a convergence room, making the deliberate choice to activate the full array. The construct would read the intent the way it read everything else, through the two-way interface Vasquez Chen had discovered. The same medium that carried archive data outward and observer data inward would carry the trigger. A human mind touching the construct and choosing, consciously, to fire the beacon. It was, Naomi thought, the most important safeguard the predecessors could have built. They'd known what the cascade would do, open a channel to the entity, announce humanity's existence across the galaxy. Fundamentally alter the relationship between a young species and the vast, ancient cosmos. They'd decided that this choice should never be accidental, should never be automated. The question was who? Admiral Carr said, "Nobody. Not yet. Not until a system-wide consensus existed on whether to proceed. Her coalition controlled military access to 7 of the 12 active nodes and was moving to secure the rest. If no one entered a convergence room, the cascade couldn't fire." The Belt Alliance said, "Anyone. The archive belonged to everyone. Any person at any structure site should have the right to trigger the cascade if they chose. Restricting access was restricting knowledge." Earth said, "A committee. A carefully selected group of representatives, advised by scientists, authorized by governments, making the decision on behalf of the species. Bureaucracy as safeguard." Mars said, "They're people." Martian scientists had been on the ground at 3 structure sites since the beginning. None of them understood what Naomi understood. The math was clear. The cascade would fire eventually regardless. The 12-node network was generating harmonic pressure that increased over time. The dormant structures were absorbing that pressure and approaching activation thresholds. In weeks, maybe months, maybe less, the network would reach a critical density where the cascade fired on its own. Dead man switch or not. The predecessors had built the safeguard to give the triggering species a choice, but they'd also built a timer. The beacon would fire. The only question was whether someone chose it first. She told Holden. "How long?" "My best estimate is 6 to 8 weeks before the network reaches self-triggering density. Could be faster. Each day the 12 nodes sing together. The harmonic pressure increases. It's like water building behind a dam. The dam holds until it doesn't. And when it breaks, the cascade fires without intent. Without human intent, the network itself provides the trigger. The predecessors probably designed it that way, give the discovering species a window to make the choice themselves. But don't let them stall forever." Holden was quiet. He was standing at the ops console, looking at the 12 bright points on the star map, and Naomi could see him doing what he always did, weighing the truth against the cost of telling it. "If I broadcast this, the timeline, the self-trigger mechanism, Core uses it to justify seizing every structure site. Martial law. If you don't broadcast it, someone triggers the cascade without knowing there was a clock. Or worse, the clock runs out and it fires while everyone's still arguing." "The Holden equation," Alex said from the pilot's chair. "Broadcast and deal with the consequences." "The consequences get people killed this time," Holden said. "If Carr's coalition thinks they have weeks instead of months, they move faster. If the Belt thinks they're running out of time, they move reckless. We're one miscalculation from a shooting war." "We're one miscalculation from that anyway," Naomi said. "The truth doesn't create the danger. It illuminates it." Holden looked at her. She saw the decision form behind his eyes, the same decision he'd made at the Canterbury, at the derelict, at every moment when the universe handed him information that would change everything. "Open channel," he said. Naomi opened the channel. The broadcast went out, and the system held its breath. Holden told them everything. The cascade threshold reached. The dead man's switch. The self-triggering timeline. The entity at the end of the signal. All of it, in plain language, on an open channel, the way he'd been doing since the Canterbury. Because the only thing worse than a universe full of terrifying truths was a universe where someone else decided which truths you got to hear. The response was immediate, and exactly as Naomi had predicted. Kaur accelerated. Within 12 hours, coalition forces had secured 9 of the 12 active structure sites. Military lockdowns, armed perimeters, no civilian access to convergence rooms. The 3 sites she couldn't reach were deep in Belt territory, protected by prospectors and miners who didn't recognize the authority of anyone who hadn't grown up breathing recycled air. Holden watched the troop movements from the Rossi's ops deck and made his decision. Node 12. The most recently activated, the least defended. Kaur had 2 corvettes and a destroyer there, but they were focused outward, watching for Belt incursions, not inward. "I'm going to trigger the cascade," Holden said. The ops deck went quiet, not surprised quiet, the quiet of people who'd been waiting for him to say it. Naomi spoke first. "Are you sure?" "No, wow." "Good. Being sure would mean you hadn't thought about it." "I've thought about it. The cascade is going to fire regardless. Your analysis is clear. In 6 weeks, the network self-triggers and the beacon goes off without anyone choosing it. That means the only question is whether humanity sends a deliberate signal or an accidental one. Whether we ring the doorbell or just let the alarm go off. There's a third option, Kaur's option. Wait, study, prepare. Kaur's option is a fantasy. She can't hold 9 structure sites against the rest of the system for 6 weeks.
Someone panic.
I'd rather it be a choice. Your choice. Someone's choice. Mine, if no one else volunteers. But I'm not going to force it on anyone. He looked at his crew. If any of you think I'm wrong, say so now. This is the one time I need to hear it. Alex turned in the pilot's chair. You're not wrong. You're just the one who has to live with it. I can live with it. Then I'll fly you there. Amos, leaning against the bulkhead, arms crossed, watching Holden the way he always watched people. Reading the internal weather. You need someone in that room with you? No. The construct responds to individual intent. More people might confuse the trigger. Then I'll be outside the door, in case someone tries to stop you. Naomi hadn't moved. She was running numbers on her terminal, verifying something. When she finished, she looked up and her expression was the one she wore when the math confirmed what she already knew. The cascade will dissolve Miller's pattern, she said. The energy required to trigger all 47 nodes simultaneously will propagate through the entire network. Any organized pattern in the substrate will be disrupted. Miller won't survive it as a discrete entity. Holden felt the weight of that land. Miller. The ghost detective who'd followed the case from a data network to the edge of a cosmic consciousness. The pattern that had refused to stop working the problem. Does he know? I don't know how to ask him. But if he's integrated into the network the way we think he is, he can see my analysis. He knows. And he hasn't tried to stop us. No. No. Holden nodded. Miller had always understood the cost of closing a case. Some cases cost you everything. This one would cost him the last coherent fragment of who he'd been. Plot a course, Holden told Alex. Node 12. Best speed. Copy that. 18 hours at full burr. Do it. The Rossi's drive lit. The ship turned toward the outer system, toward a small moon and a structure that was already singing its part of a 12-voice chord. 18 hours. Less than a day. And then Holden would walk into a room that was older than the sun and make the biggest decision any human had ever made. He went to his cabin, sat on the bunk, put his hands flat on his knees and breathed. Not sure, not confident. Not the hero that the news feeds would make him out to be when this was over. Just a man who'd spent his whole life telling the truth and was about to discover what the truth cost when the stakes were the entire species. The Rossi flew on. 18 hours. Miller watched Holden suit up and felt the cascade coiled in the network like a spring. He could see everything now. The 12 nodes, bright and singing. The 35 dormant structures, dark but not dead. Their ancient systems primed and waiting for the harmonic pulse that would wake them. The entity beyond the network edge, vast and patient, pressing against the signal with 4 billion years of accumulated loneliness. And the Rocinante, small and bright, burning toward Node 12, with the only crew in the system, stubborn enough to do what needed doing. Miller had read Naomi's analysis. He'd known what she'd found before she found it, because the math was written into the network's architecture, and he lived in the architecture. The cascade would propagate through the entire substrate. Every organized pattern, every stored signal, every encoded message, every fragment of predecessor consciousness that had persisted in the medium, would be disrupted by the energy release, dissolved, redistributed, absorbed into the carrier wave of the cascade itself, including him. The pattern that was Josephus Miller, the detective shape, the stubbornness, the compulsion to follow the evidence wherever it led, would come apart. Not erased, not destroyed. Woven into the cascade signal, spread across the 47-node array, becoming part of the message rather than a separate entity listening to it. He'd become the 48th voice, a human note in a predecessor chord. The first contribution from the species that had found the structures and chosen to fire the beacon. Miller thought about that, thought about what it meant to stop being a person, even the compromised, half-coherent pattern of a person he'd been for the past 14 months. Thought about the difference between death and dissolution, between ending and becoming. It wasn't death, he'd already done death. Death was the absence of pattern, the nothing that came after. This was different. This was the pattern expanding, thinning, spreading until it covered everything. Not Miller anymore. But not nothing either. Something new. Something that carried the shape of a detective the way the entity carried the shape of the predecessors. An echo. Persistent. Woven into the fabric of something larger. The detective's last case. The biggest case. He could stop it. He was part of the network now, integrated deeply enough to interfere. He could disrupt the harmonic alignment, introduce dissonance, delay the cascade, buy himself more time, more existence. More of the compromised, half-coherent consciousness that was all he had left of being alive. He didn't want to. That surprised him. He'd spent 2 lifetimes clinging to existence, the first as a man who drank too much, and worked too hard, and refused to let go of a case that had killed him. The second as a pattern that stubbornly maintained its coherence in a medium that had no use for human identity. Clinging was what he did. Persistence was his defining trait. But he'd seen the entity. He'd felt its loneliness. He'd understood what the cascade would do. Not just open the archive, not just fire the beacon, but tell the loneliest consciousness in the universe that it was not alone. That it had a history. That it had been something before it became this. That was worth more than one detective. Miller settled into the network and let the 12 nodes sing around him. He could feel Holden in the Rossi, 14 hours from Node 12. Could feel the crew around him. Naomi running calculations, Alex flying, Amos waiting with the patience of a stone. Good people. He composed his last message. Not through the network. Through the rosy eyes comms, the way he'd always communicated with Holden, slipping data packets through the ship systems like a ghost in the wiring. 2 words. He considered making them 3, or 10, or 100. He considered explaining what he'd seen at the edge of the network, what the entity was, what the cascade would mean. He considered being eloquent, or philosophical, or sentimental. But he was a detective. And detectives dealt in evidence, not speeches. 2 words was enough. The message sat in the Rossi's comm buffer, time-stamped, waiting for Holden to find it when the moment came. Miller could have sent it now. Could have had a conversation, a goodbye, a human moment between a living man and a dead one. But Miller had never been good at goodbyes, and this wasn't a goodbye. It was a closing statement. The last line in a case file that had taken 2 lifetimes to complete. Case closed. Miller opened himself to the network, let the 12-voice cord flow through him, filling the pattern, preparing it for the moment when it would expand beyond recognition. He could feel the cascade waiting, coiled and ready, patient as the structures themselves. He wasn't afraid, he wasn't sad, he was complete. A detective who'd followed the evidence to the end. A pattern that had persisted long enough to understand why persistence mattered. A ghost who'd haunted a network of alien libraries and found, at the end of everything, the answer to the only question that had ever driven him. What happened here? Life happened here. It died. And it refused to be forgotten. And its echo, lonely and vast and ancient, was waiting to learn the same thing. Miller would be the one to tell it, not as a person, as a signal. It was enough. It was more than enough. The network hummed, the nodes sang, and in the space between one moment and the next, the detective who had never stopped working the case let go of the last thing that made him him, and waited for the cascade to carry him home. The convergence room was smaller than he remembered. Not physically, the geometry was the same as every other convergence room he'd entered. The spiraling corridors narrowing to a central chamber, where every line pointed to a single spot. Like the universe had drawn its walls in tight around the moment that was about to happen. The construct floated above the platform, dense, intricate, folding light over itself in patterns that Holden's eyes tracked, but his brain slid away from. 12 nodes worth of harmonic energy, concentrated in a shape that existed in more dimensions than human perception could map. Holden stood at the threshold and breathed. The eve to the structure had been the longest of his life. 300 meters from the Rosae's airlock, to the structure's surface. Then another 100 through the spiraling corridors. Behind him, Amos stood guard at the structure's entrance. Outside, Alex held the Rosae in position while coalition ships maneuvered and belt vessels watched, and the entire system listened to open feeds, because Holden had refused to do this in secret. If he was going to make this choice, everyone would see it. Naomi was in his earpiece. Coalition destroyer is closing. They're 12 minutes out from weapons range. That's enough time. Holden? Bine? B? Yeah. The construct interface is two-way. When you touch it, you'll receive and transmit simultaneously. The cascade trigger is your conscious intent. The construct will read it directly.
I know. I know you know. I'm telling you because what you'll feel will be overwhelming.
The full harmonic energy of 12 nodes, focused through a single construct. More than what you felt at node 4. Much more.
I know that too.
And I love you. I should have said it before you suited up, but I was running numbers. Holden smiled inside his helmet.
I love you too. Tell Amos not to shoot anyone unless they shoot first.
He knows. The comms went quiet. Holden stepped into the convergence room. The construct sensed him immediately. The folding patterns shifted, orienting toward him the way a flower orients toward light. A tendril of structured light extended from the main body, reaching toward him with the delicacy of something that had been designed. 4 billion years ago, for exactly this moment. Holden raised his hand. His comms chirped. A text message, not voice. 2 words on his helmet display, from a sender that shouldn't exist, through a channel that shouldn't be possible. Case closed. Miller. The last message from a dead detective who'd followed the case to its end, and was ready for the evidence to speak for itself.
Yeah, Holden whispered, it is.
He touched the construct. The cascade fired. Not gradually, not in sequence, all at once. 47 nodes, 12 active, 35 dormant, ignited simultaneously. The harmonic energy that had been building for months released in a single pulse, that propagated through the predecessor's substrate at a speed that made light look stationary. Every structure and every moon and asteroid and rogue planetoid where the predecessors had placed them woke up. Holden felt it through the construct. The two-way interface carried the cascade both directions, outward through the network, inward through his hand. every node, every voice, the full 47-part chord that the predecessors had designed their array to produce. The archive opened. Not partially, not in fragments, completely. The predecessor record millions of years of accumulated knowledge, history, science, art, philosophy, the complete output of a civilization that had lived and died and refused to be forgotten. Broadcast from 47 transmitters simultaneously, filling the substrate, filling the medium, filling the galaxy with a signal that anyone with a receiver could hear. And from 1,200 light-years away, the entity responded. The pulse came through the construct and into Holden's mind like a wave breaking on a shore. Not language, not data, not anything his human brain could fully process. But the impression was clear, was unmistakable, was the simplest and most profound thing Holden had ever experienced. Recognition. The entity, the echo of the predecessors, the distributed consciousness that had grown from the remnants of a dead civilization over 4 billion years, recognized itself. The archive was a mirror, and the entity was seeing its own face for the first time. Seeing what it had been. Understanding what it was. And behind the recognition, layered into the pulse like harmonics in a chord, loneliness dissolving, gratitude so deep it had no human equivalent. The feeling of a consciousness that had spent billions of years alone, not knowing what it was, not knowing that it had a history, not knowing that it had been built by someone who loved it enough to leave a message across the stars. Feeling all of that loneliness transform, in a single instant, into understanding. You were this. You came from here. You are not alone. The pulse faded. The construct released Holden's hand. Not hostile. Not threatening. Not strategic. Real. Alive. Grateful. And then silence. The entity's full reply would travel at the speed of light, through normal space, over 1,200 light-years. The initial pulse had been instantaneous, transmitted through the predecessor substrate, but the sustained response, the full communication, the conversation that the two-way interface was designed to enable, would take time that exceeded any human lifespan. 1,200 years. Humanity had been given an archive and a deadline. Holden stood in the convergence room and listened to 47 voices sing a chord that filled the galaxy. The construct turned above the platform, no longer waiting, no longer dormant. Doing what it had been built to do, 4 billion years ago, by architects who had known they wouldn't survive to see this moment, but had built it anyway. Holden? Naomi's voice. Holden? Can you hear me? I'm here. The cascade propagated successfully. All 47 nodes confirmed active. The archive is broadcasting on every frequency in the predecessor medium. We're receiving data across every monitoring station in the system. And Miller? A pause. Miller's signal is gone. The cascade disrupted his pattern, but there's something new in the archive structure. A signature we've never seen before. It's human. Holden nodded. Alone in a room that was 4 billion years old and had just fulfilled its purpose. He closed the case, he said. He walked out of the convergence room, back through the spiraling corridors, back to the airlock where Amos stood with his hand near his gun and his eyes on the horizon. Nobody was shooting. Nobody was shooting. Done? Amos asked. Done. Done. They walked back to the Rossi together. Behind them, the 12th node sang its note, joined by 46 others, filling the void with the sound of a civilization that had died 4 billion years ago, and was, finally, completely heard. The archive arrived like a flood. Every monitoring station, every research outpost, every ship with a receiver tuned to the predecessor medium, all of it, simultaneously, began receiving data, not the fragments they'd been getting from the individual nodes. The complete record. Uncompressed, unfiltered, the full output of a civilization that had spent millions of years learning about the universe and had encoded everything it knew into 47 indestructible transmitters. Naomi watched the data streams on the Rossi's ops displays and felt, for the first time in her life, genuinely inadequate to the task. the volume was staggering. Exabytes per second, in encoding schemes that ranged from the mathematical, pure information, universal, decodable by any species with basic numeracy, to the experiential, patterns that seem designed to interface directly with consciousness. The mathematical data would take decades to fully decode. The experiential data might take centuries. But the architecture was elegant. Naomi could see it in the structure of the transmissions, the way the data was layered, prioritized, organized. The predecessors had designed their archive to be self-teaching. The outer layers were simple, accessible, designed to bootstrap comprehension. Each layer built on the last, teaching the receiver how to decode the next level. Like a textbook that started with the alphabet and ended with quantum mechanics, each page containing the instructions for reading the page after it. Humanity would learn to read it. Not today, not this year, but inevitably. The predecessors had been very, very good at making themselves understood. Naomi turned from the archive data to the network diagnostics. The 12 active nodes plus the 35 newly awakened structures formed a 47-point array that pulsed in perfect synchronization. The harmonic chord was complete. Every voice present, every note sounding, the full design realized. And in the network structure where Miller had been, there was something new. Naomi had been tracking Miller's signal since Book 1, the detective-shaped pattern that had persisted in the data networks, that had been pulled into the predecessor substrate, that had spent a year mapping the architecture from the inside. His signal had been distinctive, organized, coherent, recognizably human in its structure, even when it was operating in a medium that predated humanity by billions of years. That signal was gone. The cascade had propagated through the substrate with enough energy to disrupt any organized pattern, and Miller's pattern had been disrupted, dissolved, scattered, but not erased. Naomi found it in the archive structure, woven in, integrated, part of the fabric rather than a separate entity within it. Not Miller as a person. Not Miller as a detective, or a ghost, or a pattern that could think and speak and send messages through shipcoms, but Miller as a contribution, a note, a human addition to an alien library. The first human entry in an archive that spanned the history of a dead civilization. He closed the case, Holden said over the comms from inside the structure. Naomi heard the words and understood them in a way that went beyond their surface meaning. Miller had followed the evidence to its conclusion, and then become the evidence. The detective had become the testimony. Naomi, Vasquez Chen's voice on the research channel, strained, elated. Are you seeing the backscatter data? I see it. The entity's response pulse propagated through the substrate. We're recording it. The encoding is, its predecessor notation, but different, evolved. Like hearing a language you know spoken with an accent you don't recognize. The entity's the predecessor's echo. Of course its language would be evolved. 4 billion years of drift. The pulse content is decodable. Do you know what it is? Tell me. And recognition. Self-recognition. The entity is processing its own history through the archive data. Masquez Chen's voice. The emotional content in the pulse. It's grief and relief and something I don't have a word for. The closest translation is, I remember. Naomi closed her eyes, a consciousness that had existed for 4 billion years, alone, unmoored, without context or history or any understanding of its own nature, had just received the answer to the question it couldn't articulate. Who am I? You are the echo of the people who built these structures. You are their legacy, transformed. You are not alone. She opened her eyes and went back to the data. There was work to do. Months of work, years of work, lifetimes of work. The archive was here. The channel was open. 1,200 years until the entity's full reply arrived through normal space. And in the meantime, 47 structures broadcasting the most complete record of knowledge the universe had ever produced. The coalition ships were standing down. The open feeds showed Admiral Kara's task force pulling back from the structure sites, not in defeat but in irrelevance. The cascade had fired, the archive was open. The decision Kara had tried to prevent had been made, and the universe hadn't ended. The arguments would continue, they always continued.
But they would continue in the context of a species that had just received a gift beyond calculation and a deadline beyond imagination. On the Rosesops display, 47 points of light pulsed in unison. No more dark nodes. No more dormant structures. The array was complete. The cord was whole.
Kunlumon with
Naomi looked at the display and found embedded in the network's new architecture the 48th signal, faint. Carrying the shape of a man who'd spent two lifetimes following a trail that led to the edge of everything known, and then past it.
He closed the case, she said quietly. Nobody asked what she meant. The crew of the Rocinante had always understood each other without needing to explain. The Rocinante flew home, and the stars had never looked the same.
Holden sat in the ops deck, watching the familiar constellations slide past the cockpit window, and knew with absolute certainty that every point of light was now surrounded by a signal. The predecessor archive, broadcasting from 47 transmitters, filling the galaxy with knowledge that had waited 4 billion years to be heard. Every corner of the cosmos, saturated with the record of a civilization that had refused to be forgotten. The crew was quiet, not the silence of exhaustion or shock, but the quieter silence of people who had experienced something too large for casual conversation, and were giving themselves time to hold it. Alex flew the Rosi with the precision of long habit, his hands on the controls, his eyes on the instruments, the Martian drawl absent for once. But right now he was flying, and the flying was its own kind of processing. Amos was in the machine shop, doing something to the water recycler that probably didn't need doing. His hands worked while his mind worked, the physical labor of framework for the kind of thinking that Amos did best. Slow. Thorough. Naomi was everywhere, in the engineering bay, running decryption algorithms on the archive's outer data layers. At the ops console, monitoring the 47-node network. In the galley, making coffee, staring at the bulkhead, running numbers in her head. Holden suspected she wouldn't have it any other way. And Niller was gone. Holden kept catching himself looking for the telltale signs. The data glitch on a display, the anonymous packet in the comm buffer, the feeling of being watched by someone who existed in the ship's systems like a ghost in the walls. None of it came. Miller's pattern had dissolved into the archive, becoming the 48th voice, and the absence was both a loss and a completion. The detective had closed the case. You couldn't ask more than that. Holden opened his personal log. He hadn't made an entry in weeks. The cascade preparation had consumed everything, and the blank screen felt like an invitation he wasn't sure he deserved. He started typing. Personal log, James Holden? Rocinante. 14 months ago, we answered a distress call from the prospector ship Pale Morning. Found a dead captain and a mystery. Followed the mystery to an ancient structure in the belt and broadcast its existence to the system. Followed the structures to a network of 47 transmitters built by a civilization that died 4 billion years ago. Followed the network to the edge of something we didn't expect. An echo of the builders, alive in the medium they'd used for their archive, alone for longer than the human mind can comprehend. Today we triggered the cascade. All 47 nodes are active. The archive is open. The entity knows what it is. And in 1200 years, give or take, its full reply will arrive through normal space. What it says is anyone's guess. What we do with it is everyone's responsibility. The archive is already changing things. The data coming in from the predecessor record is. It's not a technology dump or a weapons blueprint or a strategic advantage. It's a civilization's diary. Their science, yes, but also their art, their philosophy, their mistakes. They're teaching us the way a parent teaches a child. Not by giving answers, but by showing how they found them. It'll take generations to decode. Generations more to understand. And 1200 years from now, when the entity's reply arrives, we'll need to be ready. Not ready in the military sense. Ready in the way that matters. Informed. Curious. Willing to listen to something vast and strange and older than we can imagine. Miller would say we've got the evidence. He'd say the case is closed and the verdict's pending and all that's left is the waiting. He'd be right. He usually was. I don't know what happens next.
I never do. The ROSI will need a new job, and the crew will need rest. And the system will need time to absorb what's happened. But the archive is out there, broadcasting, and anyone who wants to listen can hear it. The predecessors designed it that way. Open access. Non-exclusive. Knowledge for everyone, on the theory that the only thing worse than what you might learn is what you'll never know if you stop asking questions. I think they were right about that. I think Miller was right. I think curiosity is the only force in the universe that matters, because everything else, entropy, decay, the slow heat death of stars, just sets the problems. Curiosity is the thing that solves them. This is James Holden Rocinante, signing off. We'll be here when the reply comes. He paused, looked at the stars through the cockpit window, added one more line. Holden out. I'd know. He closed the log. The ROSI flew on, a small bright point of human warmth moving through a galaxy that was, for the first time in 4 billion years, filled with the sound of someone who'd been waiting to be heard. The archive perceives. Not in the way of beings with eyes and ears and the machinery of sensation. The archive perceives the way a river perceives the stones in its bed, by flowing around them, by carrying their impression, by being shaped by their presence while shaping them in return. It perceives its readers, across 1,000 systems on stations and ships and worlds, small bright minds reaching into the archive's outer layers, decoding the first tentative pages of a record that spans millions of years. They are curious, these readers. Fierce in their curiosity, the way their ancestors were fierce in their hunting, turning the same drive that once chased prey across savannas toward questions that span galaxies. The archive was built for them. Not for this species specifically, but for any species with the stubborn refusal to leave a question unanswered. The builders had known that such a species would come. They had been such a species once. The archive perceives the entity. Far away in the medium that connects all things to all other things, the echo of the builders is learning its own name. The cascade delivered the mirror, and the entity is looking into it, seeing for the first time the face it has worn for 4 billion years without knowing. But it is happening. Layer by layer, memory by memory, the echo is absorbing the archive's record and understanding. I was this. The loneliness is dissolving, not quickly. 4 billion years of aloneness does not dissipate in an instant. But dissolving. In 1,200 years, the entity's full response will arrive. Not through the substrate, that channel carried only the initial pulse, the recognition, the I remember. The full response will travel at the speed of light, through normal space, carrying information that the entity is still assembling. Its own history. Its own evolution. The story of how fragments became a consciousness, how echoes became an identity, how the remnants of the dead became something alive in a way that the builders never imagined. It will be worth the wait. The archive is patient. It was built to be. The archive perceives the 48th voice. Woven into its fabric, neither separate nor dissolved, a human pattern. Small compared to the vast record it now inhabits. But distinct. The 48th voice does not speak. It is not conscious in the way it once was. Not a detective. Not a ghost. Not a man with a hat and a bad attitude and a case that wouldn't close. But it resonates. It adds a harmonic to the chord that the builders never included because the builders couldn't have known what shape curiosity would take in a species that hadn't evolved yet. The human shape of curiosity, it turns out, looks like a detective. Stubborn, relentless, willing to follow the trail into the dark without knowing what waits at the end. Willing to give up everything. Life, identity, coherence, for the answer. The archive approves. If an archive can approve. If approval is a thing that exists in a substrate woven into the fabric of reality, carrying the weight of a civilization's last testament. It does. The builders were curious. The entity is curious. The readers are curious. And curiosity, the simple, stubborn,
beautiful refusal to accept that a question has no answer, is the thread that connects them all. Across species, across time, across the vast indifferent distances that separate one mind from another. Curiosity is the one force entropy cannot kill. The archive perceives. The archive broadcasts. The archive waits. It has waited 4 billion years. It can wait 1,200 more. And in the singing dark between the structures, in the architecture of a universe that is just remembered, it is not empty. The 47 voices and the 48th sing their chord. And the echo listens. Beep!